Once a month, my dogs get a box filled with special surprises. Inside are two or three healthy treats and two or three unique dog toys. I'm talking about BarkBox. Starting at $21 a month for the big dog box, BarkBox delivers a box full of joy right to my front door. You can get a 1 month subscription, which is one BarkBox, 6 month or 12 month subscriptions. Shipping is free inside the contiguous United States. When you're a new subscriber and use our special link, BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ, BarkBox will donate $25 to Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. Remember, BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ. Treat your dog while helping a greyhound still waiting for a home. Welcome to About Greyhounds, the podcast about greyhounds. This is Jacqueline Howard of Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. So I want to start off this episode with telling you a story. And that story is the story of two greyhounds and one Costco-sized jar of chocolate. So I bought this jar at Costco, a big jar, filled with chocolate turtles. And I put it on my kitchen counter. And then I went out for about half an hour. When I came back, I realized that the baby gate going into my kitchen was open. And someone had stolen my jar of chocolates. So I went into the formal living room, and what do I find? But two dogs were roaching, meaning they had their four legs up in the air as they were sleeping on their backs. And a completely demolished jar, but no chocolate. Oh no. It's funny now, Patty. That, by the way, is Patty Comerford, who is joining us in this episode. So I look at this jar of empty chocolate and the two dogs with their legs up in the air. I've only been out for a little bit, so I know it's happened quite recently, within the last half hour. Chocolate is toxic to dogs. It was Sunday night. Of course it was Sunday night. And I say that because these things seem to happen when the regular vet is closed and I have to go to the emergency vet, which I'm glad is available to me, but that I generally don't like to go to because it's incredibly expensive. But it won't stop me from going. I need to save my dogs. I don't know if both dogs ate the chocolate or if just one dog did. I have the feeling it's just one of the dogs. I can't take that chance. So I get both dogs into my dog car, as I call it, and take them to the hospital on a Sunday night. And I had the vet induced vomiting for both of them. Guess what? The one I suspected having eaten the chocolate was the guilty one, and the other one was completely innocent, yet was put through this just, what would we call it, just terrifying, horrible,
invasive
experience. And by the way, the innocent dog is my dog, Pilot, who I often say should be wearing an ascot and have the monocle and be smoking a pipe. So he was very indignant about this whole thing, my poor Pilot. But anyway, this came to a tune of $600. Later on that night, I called my friend, Patty Comerford, and I said, Patty, you're not going to believe this. And I tell her the story. And she says, why didn't you just give them some peroxide? I said, what are you talking about? And she proceeded to tell me that if I had given my dogs, say, a bowl of ice cream with a few teaspoons maybe of peroxide, they would have thrown up. But I didn't know this. And a bottle of peroxide, which was already in my house, cost what? Maybe $3 compared to the $600 I dished out to the emergency vet on a Sunday night when all things go wrong. this leads me to today's topic, first aid for your greyhound. But most of what is shared in this episode can apply to first aid for just about any type of dog. I am happy to welcome Patty Comerford to the show. You just heard her speaking. Patty is a member of our Board of Trustees. She is also a member of our Executive Board in the role of Secretary. She has been involved with Greyhounds for over 2 decades and has fostered at least 250 Greyhounds over the years. So, Patty, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
So, I just shared a lesson I learned about hydrogen peroxide. Before Patty and I dive into our conversation, here's our full disclosure. So listen carefully. We're sharing what we know as informational and not as medical advice. By no means are we medical professionals. A trained veterinarian should be consulted with any questions or concerns you may have about your dog and his or her health. So right off the bat, we talked about how to induce vomiting if a pet has consumed a toxin like chocolate. But let's talk about prevention, starting with foods. So, aside from chocolate, Patty, what are some other foods that dogs shouldn't eat?
So, we have an alphabetical list of items, and we're going to start with alcohol.
Now you're talking, Patty. we're talking about toxins. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Alcohol can cause vomiting, diarrhea, decreased coordination, pretty much what it does to people, it can do to dogs.
Okay.
But under no circumstances should your dog be given any alcohol. And if you think that they have, you need to call your vet immediately.
Okay.
So the next one we're going to is avocado, which can cause cardiovascular damage in the animals. The next is chocolate, coffee, and caffeine, which is around most of our houses quite a bit, and relates to your chocolate story.
Which included chocolate and caffeine in the chocolate, yes.
So what they say is dark chocolate is worse than milk chocolate, but all chocolate is bad. So once again, if ingested, you want to contact your vet. Chocolate, caffeine, and coffee can cause vomiting, diarrhea, panting, excessive thirst, and urination. Citrus. The stems and peels and fruit and seeds of a citrus plant can cause irritation to a dog's central nervous system. And once again, if your dog ingests a good deal of it, they need to have the vet contacted. Coconut and coconut oil, which is interesting because coconut seems to be the rage nowadays.
It really does.
Yes. But in large quantities, it's very bad for your dog. It can cause upset stomach, loose stools, or diarrhea. And coconut water is high in potassium, which is not good for a dog.
Okay.
Grapes and raisins. Many people think giving their dogs grapes is a cute little snack, but in high quantities, grapes are very, very, very toxic and can cause kidney damage. And then, you know, raisins are dried grapes, so you need to be
right.
careful with them. Macadamia nuts can cause weakness.
Can I tell you, Patty, nuts, I hate to interrupt, but we've hit on yet another toxin involved in my first story because they were chocolate turtles made with macadamia nuts. This is my favorite thing, dark chocolate and macadamia nuts put together. He ate the whole thing.
So it was the perfect storm of good food.
Yeah, so not only was that jar expensive, but the aftermath, very expensive.
Very expensive.
Sorry to interrupt, Patty.
That's
I just
okay.
had to check the horror. No.
So macadamia nuts are not good, as well as other nuts. Almonds, pecans, walnuts, they have a high amount of oil and fat. And fat can cause stomach problems and possibly pancreatitis.
Oh, boy. And that is rather dangerous. You know, Patty, I want to interject here as I think about it, because I have cats and I know several people who adopt greyhounds have cats, that milk and dairy is actually bad for cats. Now, I know this is a podcast about greyhounds. I'm the host. I just wanted to mention it because you see so many times in the movies and on TV, people giving a cat a soft serve of milk, and isn't that so cute? And they love it. Don't give your cat milk or milk products, that's cow's milk, because they cannot tolerate it, and you'll have a very sick cat on your hands and a lot of diarrhea. So just wanted to interject there with my wisdom about cats.
Good to
know. So please proceed.
Onions, garlic, and chives are herbs that are used quite frequently in cooking, but can lead to red blood cell damage in dogs.
Oh, wow.
As well as cats. The next food you want to avoid for your dog is salt and salty snack foods. Like people, it makes dogs thirsty, and the sodium is not good for them. Something that truly you need to be careful about is xylitol, which is used as a sweetener. It's usually in gum, but quite a few peanut butters are starting to use it in their ingredients. So when you buy peanut butter to give to your dog, you really want to look at the list of ingredients and be careful that xylitol is not part of that list.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't know that about peanut butter. Yes. And peanut butter is truly a greyhound favorite.
It is.
So that's really good to know. So xylitol, like you said, it's a sweetener then.
Yes. And then yeast and yeast dough is something you want to be careful about. It can cause bloat. Which is a very serious dog problem.
So if my dog has gotten into some dough that includes yeast,
you
call my vet right away.
Vet. Yeah,
got
exactly.
It. Okay. So you've given us a pretty long list of foods that can be toxic to dogs. What about other things around the house that could be dangerous for a dog?
Cleaning products, you would do with a child, you need to keep things away from dogs that have dangerous ingredients, and cleaning products do. Another one is insecticides and
rodenticides.
Things
that kill rodents.
Things that kill rodents, exactly. You want to be careful with them. They're poison. They kill little animals.
Sure.
And medicine. Medicine is always needs to be put away for children, for dogs. It needs to be kept in a safe area. But interestingly, something like potpourri, you also need to be careful. It can burn their mouth.
Oh, wow.
And another thing to add to that is mothballs, which can cause a real serious injury and illness if ingested. Tobacco products, alkaline batteries, and something that I didn't know, pennies minted after 1982.
Why is that?
Because they contain zinc.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, really interesting. And then something that many people know about, antifreeze, weed killer, fertilizer, ice melt. All need to be very carefully monitored around your animals. And if your animals do get into them, you need to contact your vet immediately.
Yeah, and I've heard about antifreeze. Now, I haven't tasted it for myself, but I've heard it's very sweet.
Yes, then that's what attracts animals to
okay.
it.
Okay, and then, you said something interesting, the ice melting chemicals, really important. Like, if you live in a place where, ice is possible in the winter or any other time, you can actually get, Pet safe. De-icer, and that's what we do. We do it for our sidewalks and the pathways leading to our house and in our driveway as well. So I have found more expensive than regular de-icers, but you will save your dog's paws.
Exactly.
And they won't lick, if they lick it off their paws.
That's exactly why
it's not
going to
poison
careful.
Them. Yeah, because most ice melting chemicals just are so bad for animals. So good point. And as far as ones, you know, pet-friendly ones, you could probably find those in like a Home Depot or a Lowe's. We go to like PetSmart or Petco, right, and that's where we pick it up. And again, it's a little pricey, but I know my dogs are safe.
Yeah, it's worth it in the long run.
So Patty, let's say my dog somehow ingests any one of the things you've talked about. What should I do?
Well, the first thing you want to do is call your vet. Unfortunately, some vet offices are not open 24/7, although many of us are lucky to have some of those around. If you have that 24/7 vet available to you, certainly use them as a contact. The other thing you can do is call Animal Poison Control. The phone number will be listed on the podcast.
Yep.
And it's also on the Greyhound Friends website. They might charge you for the call, but it's certainly worthwhile.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when you call, the information you need to have is information about your dog, the breed, the age, the weight, if they're on any medication. You need to describe what your dog ate and how much. If you can bring in the package or container, that's very, very helpful. When the dog might have ingested the poison is very, very important because it helps the vet figure out how to treat them. And a sample of the vomit, if that has happened, is also very helpful for the vet.
So to get that sample, could I wipe it with a paper towel and put that paper towel in a baggie or something? Okay.
So how do we get our dogs to actually give us that sample? How do we get them to vomit? So here's the way to induce vomiting. And all of this should be approved by your vet, approved by poison control, before you actually do it. So it's 1 teaspoon of 3% hydrogen peroxide for every 10 pounds of body weight.
Okay.
So you have the hydrogen peroxide. You have a large syringe, no needle, but the syringe part, or a turkey baster.
Okay.
You have rubber gloves, unless you want to be touching horrible things. And, paper towels, cleaning solution, because what went in is going to come back out again, hopefully.
Sure.
So what you do is you actually put the hydrogen peroxide in the turkey baster. Shoot it into the back of your dog's mouth. It goes down their throat. What you want to do is walk your dog around a little bit because that will help whatever went in hopefully come back out again. If vomiting has not occurred within 15 minutes, you can redo the hydrogen peroxide.
Okay.
But you only want to do it once after your initial treatment. If vomiting has not occurred, at that point you're taking your dog to the vet.
Okay. And how soon on average would a dog vomit after doing this?
It should be, you hope, within the next 10 minutes.
Okay.
Walking really does help get them to vomit. Sometimes people actually also give their dogs a little bit of food, although it seems counterproductive. If they eat something and then the instinct to vomit after being given the peroxide helps.
Okay, that makes sense. So, Patty, like I said, you went through a pretty long list of toxins, both in food and even just everyday household items. So we are going to be putting links to those lists into the podcast episode description, along with the information about Poison Control Center, like their phone number and what you need when you call. Right now, though, I'd like to turn our focus to something we sometimes hear about, and that's seizures. And it's something I'm not that familiar with, and I'm sure many people in the audience aren't either. And we will actually be dedicating an episode of the podcast to seizures in the future. But for now, can you describe what a seizure looks like?
Sure. A seizure is abnormal disturbance in the brain. So what happens is your dog could collapse, start jerking, their legs. They might stiffen. They might twitch. There might be a loss of consciousness. They might start drooling, chewing, or chomping, or foaming at the mouth. Sometimes they fall down and make a paddling motion with their legs. Sometimes they poop or pee during the seizure. They sometimes don't have all of those physical symptoms, but merely are standing still, looking dazed, unsteady, or confused, and stare off into space. So there's a variety of types. There's many types of seizures, and there's many ways that dogs can emulate a seizure.
So how long would a seizure last, or is it different depending on the dog?
They usually last about 2 or 3 minutes, okay. But it does depend on the dog.
Okay. And you know, Patty, it's funny. I've only had one personal experience with seizures. And of course, you were the first person I called about it when it happened. So my dog, my greyhound, Pilot, he's 13 years old. He's in pretty good health. He's in surprisingly good health and shape. But he, one night, he got up and he wanted to go out. And I was talking to him, as I usually do, and he's always happy for me to talk to him, and he's, you know, a pretty happy-go-lucky dog. But I could tell something was wrong. He was staring off into space. He looked confused. His eyes were, like, glazed over.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started walking in circles. And he wasn't here. I know he couldn't hear me. And I let him, you know, I let him outside to the backyard because my, you know, I thought he must have to go to the bathroom. I thought that was, mm-hmm. you know, something else was going on, obviously. But,
right.
you know, because he'd gotten up. So I went outside with him. He walked around in circles, like in a daze, like a stupor. Like if I didn't know better, I would have said the dog was drunk.
Right.
It's like staggering almost. And I thought, is he having a stroke? What's going on? And then he snapped out of it. Just as fast as it came.
Right.
Is as fast as it laughs. Of course, I called you and said, what is this? You know,
right.
And you said it was probably a seizure. And so then I read a lot about it. And sure enough, I'm sure that's what it was. If this happens, do you know, can a vet tell that a dog's had a seizure after the fact? Or does it depend on what's going on?
I don't think there's any way to medically tell that they had a seizure. Like, I don't believe their blood work is different. It really is the owner's recollection of what happened and explaining that, and then the veterinarian can make a determination whether or not a seizure might have occurred. In many cases, like your boy Pilot, it just is a one-time thing that happens and it never happens again. If it does happen again, certainly you want to seek medical treatment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are things that you want to do. You did the right thing in taking him outside because you gave him space. You want to do that in case they do have a thrashing type of seizure.
So he's on the grass.
You don't want them knocking into furniture and hurting themselves.
Sure.
You don't want to restrain them. You know, let the seizure happen. You don't want to put anything in their mouth. That's a fallacy that they can swallow their tongue.
So, because you often see it, especially in movies,
yeah.
when someone, a person's having a seizure, so they yeah. won't swallow or bite no. their tongue.
Well, they might bite their tongue, but they will not swallow their tongue. So,
okay.
And they might bite you if you try to put something
oh, yeah.
in their mouth.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what they're doing. So
sure.
You just want to let them be. You want to time the seizure because that's good information for the vet, how long it lasted. And after the seizure has stopped, you want to keep them warm and comfortable and contact your veterinarian.
Okay. So if my dog has a seizure, or I suspect my dog has a seizure, bottom line, take the dog to the vet.
Exactly.
Okay. And it could be something simple, like you said, like it's, you know, something happens in the brain. This
right. A one-time.
Yep. thing happens, or it could be something other. There could be so many different reasons for
right.
seizures. So seek the guidance of your vet. Okay, that that makes absolute sense. So another thing we hear about a lot, like adopters will call us or contact us somehow and say, my dog is limping. And I'm sure limping can be caused from many things. So what should I do if I see my dog limping?
Well, you should first of all not panic, because there are many reasons for a dog to limp. I actually was very concerned about one of my fosters because she was limping, brought her to the vet, and the vet discovered a corn. And as we know, corns can cause limping, and that will be a future podcast about corns, but it was a very simple explanation. I didn't need to be all worried. You know, now she has a corn, but it's much better than thinking that something really bad was going on with her. So corns can cause limping, a pad injury. They could scuff their foot on a stone in your outside your house and scrape their pad, and that would cause them to limp. They could have a nail injury. That might cause them to limp. Their nail hurts. They could have arthritis in their leg. Mm-hmm. They could have a sprain or a strain from running around. Or, you know, these guys are couch potatoes. So if they do some unusual exercise, it might cause them to be limping like us. So another injury you might want to look for if your dog is limping is possible toe dislocation. That's when you look at your dog's feet and one of their toes is askew. Definitely a vet visit. And then quite often they'll slit the webbing in between their toes.
Ooh, like we would do between our fingers.
Exactly. Ooh. It's painful.
Sure.
And it probably should be a vet visit, because it takes a while to heal, and usually they wrap their foot.
And you'd probably get antibiotics, I'd assume, because it is on the foot.
Right.
Okay. And I do want to mention something about arthritis, just to reiterate, that can happen to a young dog just as it could happen to young people. For example, I have arthritis and I'm quite young.
You are very young.
That's right. So, it seemed funnier in my head, Patty.
And, you know, the very last thing that we all want to hear about, but is it certainly a possibility, is osteosarcoma, which is bone cancer.
Right. And that is going to be a future episode.
Yes.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. What if my greyhound is bleeding because she's cut herself? I know that greyhounds have notoriously thin skin and that this could happen. So what do I do if my dog's bleeding?
Well, greyhounds tend to bleed a lot in certain areas of their body, just like any dog. They bleed a lot if there's a cut on their head, and they bleed a lot if there's a cut on their ear. Hmm. So the first thing is not to panic. There are two types of bleeding, external and internal.
Okay.
We'll talk about the external first. First of all, if you see blood on your dog, once again, don't panic. Muzzle your dog, because you're going to try to figure out where the blood is coming from. And if you're touching something sore, you don't want them snapping or biting at you. If you find where the injury is, depending on how big it is, then you want to either try to treat it yourself, or you want to go to the vet. So my rule of thumb is, if it looks like it needs stitches, I'm going to the vet.
Right, right.
So, you know, first of all, these dogs scar easily. I don't necessarily want them to have a scar. If the rule of thumb that I found online is, if the cut is a half an inch deep or deeper, or a half an inch long, then you want to take them to the vet.
Now, does that apply to just greyhounds, or?
I got it from a regular dog article.
Okay.
So I would go with all dogs. If the injury or the gash is because of a puncture from a dog bite, you want to go to the vet, because you need an antibiotic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. If it's just, say, a scrape, or, you know, some little wound that you know, it's not that bad. I think I can treat it at home. And they're bleeding. What you want to do is take a gauze, piece of gauze, put it on wherever the injury is, and hold it for about 5 minutes. What you want to try to do is create a clot.
Okay.
So you hold it over the injury, and take it off. If the wound is starting to clot, you're good. If it's still continuing to bleed and it's been a while, I would still consider going to the vet. If it stopped bleeding, you can put some antibiotic ointment on it, maybe a bandage, maybe some vet wrap, depending on where it is. With greyhounds, if they have an ear bleed, what you can do is the 5 minute rule of holding a piece of gauze on it.
Okay.
And then you can put Quick Stop, which is what we use for their nails.
Oh, sure.
But it also works on ears. If you don't have Quick Stop, you can put cornstarch, flour, baby powder, or sugar. You just want something that's going to help coagulate. The problem with ears is that they then tend to shake their head and start the whole bleeding process
right.
over again. So sometimes putting a very lovely bandage around their ear to hold it in place is with vet wrap is what you're going to end up doing.
So of course your dog is going to look like he's much more hurt.
Well, they have a babushka on their head. Yeah.
Or like old cartoons when someone had the
exactly.
lumps.
Yeah. But the idea is you don't want them shaking their head and not re-injuring, but causing the clot to become unclotted.
Right.
The other injury that we deal with greyhounds, particularly because they have long skinny tails, is happy tail.
Ah, my favorite.
Happy tail. Happy tail is when they cause an injury to their tail that they have a gash that bleeds. They wag their tail because they're happy. They hit it on something, an injury occurs, and then they keep wagging and blood goes everywhere.
Patty, can I interject?
You certainly can.
So, my younger dog, he's 8 years old now. His name is Baron. So, one day, I came home from work, and there is blood all over my house. I shouldn't say not the whole house, but the dog areas, which is the front half of the downstairs, the up the stairs to the second floor, the hallway in the second floor, and my bedroom.
Right.
All throughout my house, up until I'll say about a 4 foot level, blood's better everywhere. It was a crime scene, Patty. If someone had come in my house, they would have called 911.
Exactly. And that's happy tail.
Oh, yeah.
It is really sometimes very difficult to treat because your dog is continuing to wag their tail. It's hard to get them to stop to wag their tail. There are many videos online on how to wrap a happy tail. Give it a shot, but quite often what happens is a piece of the tail needs to be amputated.
Sure.
Because you just can't get it to heal. And we probably will do a future podcast on happy tail.
That's a great idea, because I'll tell you, because I knew it had to be a dog.
Right.
I just wasn't sure, because I wasn't familiar with happy tail at the time. I just wasn't sure what had happened. And then I found, I found Pilot first, checked him, nothing's wrong.
Right.
I find Baron. Baron is laying on my bed and sleeping. So I check him out, and sure enough, I found it was a very small cut on his
very
tail.
Very small, but bleeds a lot. And because their tail is moving, that's what happens with the blood spray.
Blood spatter everywhere, just up to 4 feet. So I tried to wrap that tail.
Yep.
And immediately after I perfectly wrapped it.
He wagged.
He wagged, and the wrapping just flew right off. Just flew right across the room. So, but I did get it to clot, but my worry was, how do I stop this from opening again? And I will tell you, this was We've had Baron for 6 years. So this happened 5 years ago. I spend hours scrubbing my walls and my table, everything, wherever he had been. And to this day,
you'll find blood.
I will find a speck of blood somewhere from that incident.
I know. It's amazing.
And luckily for Baron, like, that never happened again. We didn't have to amputate. I have fostered several dogs whose tails were amputated and babysat dogs whose tails were amputated. They do fine. You know, sometimes they don't amputate the whole tail. Sometimes it's the whole tail. They're fine.
They are. It's us more than them.
Yeah.
They don't miss it.
Yeah. One other thing I want to add, when you had been talking about, like, if they get a cut and it's like half an inch.
Right.
That's when you want to go in for the stitches. There's also some parts on a greyhound in particular, some body parts, that where the skin is very taut. And I, one time, Baron again, it's always Baron, Patty. Baron had... I don't know what he did. He came in with a cut, so I'm thinking he must have maybe got caught on a branch or something, and it wasn't a very big cut. It was on his back thigh. I don't know why I'm pointing to a dog's back thigh, but it was on his back thigh where the skin is especially taut, and I did get it to clot, but because the skin was so taut there, like, it was just open, like, there were, so I did have to take him in,
right,
you know, to get him some stitches.
Yeah.
And he was fine, you know, but their skin is, like you said, it's just so thin that sometimes we just have to get the stitches. We're not giving you stitches,
Hopper.
Okay.
People are walking past. So, I can see them through the fence.
So our audience knows, Patty and I are recording today's episode in her beautiful backyard. She won't tell me how many dogs are here. I'm going to say maybe 9. It could be 10. So they're going to sing for us a little bit when people walk by, that they can see through the fence.
Song of your people is being sung.
Okay. So you guys have had your piece? Good.
Yeah.
Okay. So. So back to you, Patty, in pleading.
Sure. The other thing you want to look for is when dogs hurt their nails. And many of our dogs break dew claws, which is the extra nail that's up on their foot.
So it's where a person's wrist would be?
Exactly.
Okay.
Some greyhounds do not have dew claws, which is great, because then you don't have to worry about it. I don't know why.
You anticipated. Why don't they have
you had that look on your face.
Yeah,
why don't
why?
They have it? You know, lots of dogs catch their nails, catch their dew claws. So the way to actually handle that is to try to keep your dog's nails as short as possible. Mm. It's an ongoing battle because, you know, dogs sometimes don't like to have their nails cut. Sometimes we forget. And, you know, you remember when there's an emergency and your dog's nail is bleeding. And then you're like, why didn't I cut their nails? So if you do happen to have a broken nail on your dog, stop the bleeding, wrap it. If the nail is incredibly loose to the point where you can remove it, you can.
Ooh, yeah.
But that then exposes the inside of their nail. So pretty much you're taking a trip to the vet.
Of course. Yeah, and I will say, Patty, I'm not brave like you. I am a big scaredy cat. I cannot and will not cut my dog's nails. I'm just so afraid. They also have black nails,
right,
which makes it a little bit harder to see the quick, which you don't want to cut. So, you know, for $12 or $13, I take my dogs to PetSmart,
right,
where they do the nails for me, you know, about once a month.
Right.
Yep.
So we talked about external bleeding, and then there's internal bleeding.
Okay, that sounds bad.
It is bad, and pretty much you're going to go to the vet.
So how do I know if my dog's bleeding internally?
If you see bleeding from their nose, mouth, rectum, or they're coughing up blood, there's blood in their urine, their gums are pale, or they collapse,
Ooh.
All signs of possible internal bleeding.
And that could be caused from just about anything?
Yeah, it could be because of poisoning. It could be because of an injury.
Okay.
It could be because of illness. But yeah, you want to be going to the vet for that.
Okay. So, Patty, I keep my dogs out of my kitchen for several reasons. Although, it's certainly not because I'm cooking, because everyone who knows me knows I don't cook, can't cook, won't cook. But I know that, you know, there, many people, you know, they have their dogs in their kitchen. And that's a place where a dog can get burned, or a dog can get burned on your grill if you're grilling outside.
Sure.
Or if you have a fire pit or anything. A dog can get a burn. What do I do if my dog gets a burn?
Well, once again, you're pretty much heading to the vet.
Oh, okay.
There are two types of burns. There's a chemical burn or an external burn. You're going to muzzle them, once again, because if your dog is injured, they're going to lash out at you.
Sure.
Not meaning to. If it's a chemical burn, you can flush it with water. If it's an external severe burn, you're going to apply ice and a compress. But once again, in both cases, you're heading to the vet.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. So I've heard of something very scary that can happen to people as well as dogs, and that's choking. Either they've taken, quite literally, more than they can chew, or they tried eating something that they shouldn't eat, like a Lego.
Right.
Believe me, I know all about Legos.
Yes.
In my house. And what do I do if my dog is choking?
Well, you can try to look in their mouth to see if there's a foreign object that you can reach.
Okay.
But once again, you need to be careful, because if a dog is choking, they're scared, and there's always the possibility of biting. If you see the object, you can try to gently remove it with pliers or a tweezer. Be careful not to push it down further. If you can't remove the object, you can try kind of like a dog Heimlich maneuver type of thing. But once again, you know, you're going to be going to the vet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a possibility your dog might not survive the trip to the vet, but you're going to give it your best shot.
Right. And try, cautiously, try to protect yourself.
Right.
Try to remove whatever the object is.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that's scary. I do want to add to what you're saying that, because I mentioned Legos, if you're someone with young kids with small toys like Legos or Army Men, which my son plays with a lot, or whatever it may be, it's important that your kids not play with these toys around the dog so that the dog doesn't pick them up, because they will. So have your kids clean up their quote-unquote bite-sized toys, or you do it. Somebody has to do it when the child isn't playing with them. In my house, and people have heard me say this often, my dogs are not allowed in my kids' rooms. I have a few reasons for that. My younger son is a Lego and Army Man freak. He just has them all over his room. The dogs can't get in there. He does play with these things outside in our backyard, but he cleans them up. He has a special container out there in his whole play area where they come in, and he knows to put them away. And I do check after he's been out there playing. So in my house, we actually have a separate kid area. It's the family room where we keep the kids' toys aside from their bedrooms. The dogs are never in our family room. We use baby gates to do that. There's a few reasons for that. But, you know, we want to keep everyone safe. And, you know, my kids want to be able to play with their toys and not be impacted by the dogs being there or having to hide their toys in that room. Another word about choking, if you give your dog balls to play with or other toys, make sure that they're of such a size that the dog can't accidentally swallow them. So make sure the toy or the ball, if it's a ball, is actually bigger than your dog's mouth. invoking Oprah Winfrey, who loves dogs. She lost one of her dogs a few years back after he swallowed a tennis ball. This is a big...
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, oh, it was terrible. It was a golden lab. And, you know, he was playing ball with the tennis ball. And he grabbed the ball and accidentally it got stuck in his throat.
Oh.
And the dog died right in front of her.
Oh, my goodness.
So... And there was nothing she could do.
Right.
Nothing. It was just a nightmare of a situation. So, again, for toys and balls, make sure whatever your dog is playing with, again, it's bigger than the dog's mouth. The dog is not going to be able to swallow it.
Right.
So, I'm going to switch gears again about something I can't stand, and that's heat. I don't like heat.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And I know that dogs can get heat stroke just like people. So, greyhounds are really sensitive to temperatures when they fall below 40 degrees and over 80 degrees. These are Fahrenheit. In fact, they're often referred to as house dogs or inside dogs because they really can't be left outside for long on hot days or even very cold days. So, what should I do if my dog gets heat stroke, which I know could very easily happen?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the symptoms of heat stroke so
sure.
You know what they are. You're going to see a dog that has rapid panting, a bright red tongue, pale gums or red gums, thick, sticky saliva. They might look depressed. They're weak. They might exhibit what you think is dizziness, and they might vomit.
Oh boy.
So yeah, it's pretty serious. So ways to not have any of that happen to your dog is to never leave your dog in a car on a hot day. Mm. You know, it's if you're on Facebook, you see all of those postings about how your car gets so hot quickly on a warm day. So you want to make sure that your dog is not in that car. To take care of or to deal with heat stroke, if you can't get your dog to a vet immediately, what you want to do is move them to a shaded area out of direct sunlight. You want to place a cool or cold wet towel around their neck. You don't want to cover their eyes. You want to also put the towel back on their thighs.
Okay.
Because they generate a lot of heat back there.
Okay.
You want to continually rinse out the towel with cool or cold water because the towel will get will acclimate to their heat.
Sure.
Very quickly. So you want to constantly be changing that towel. If there's a hose available, you want to put running water on the hose, especially, as I said, on their abdomen or between their hind legs.
Okay.
You want to transport your dog to a vet as soon as possible. You do not want to use ice.
Huh. Okay.
Because ice constricts their blood vessels.
Okay.
And that's not what you want.
Oh, wow. So that's pretty counterintuitive.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, you would think that ice would cool your dog down quickly, but it's very dangerous. You want to use cool... You can use cold water, but not ice water.
Okay. And like you said, take the dog to the vet where
yes.
they'll probably get some fluids and the vet
exactly.
will be equipped to cool them down even further.
Yep.
Okay. So, one last thing I want to ask you about, and that is your thoughts on having a first aid kit ready for your dog. I mean, I know many people have one for people in their homes. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense to have one for your dog?
Oh, sure. Sure. Many of us have cabinet drawers just full of things for dogs' first aid needs. But there are some things that all of us should have who have dogs. The first thing is you should have written down somewhere your vet's phone number. If you don't know it by heart, have it written down somewhere. So in an emergency, you're not looking it up. You can just find it.
Or you can
quickly.
Put it right into your
into the kit.
Mobile phone's
right.
Mobile phone contact list.
Exactly.
Or have it, like you said, like right in the kit. That's the perfect place for
yeah.
it.
You want to have a digital thermometer. Usually dogs' body temperature is between 101 and 102.5 degrees Fahrenheit.
And what is that, Celsius, do you know?
It is. I do know because you wrote it down for me. It's 38.3 to 39.2.
This is a very natural conversation. Unscripted.
Very unscripted. So besides having a digital thermometer, you want to have a self-sticking gauze, towels, you want to have adhesive tape, an antibiotic ointment, saline solution that helps clean wounds, vet wrap. I use liquid bandage quite often, especially on those ears. Those type of things.
Oh, that's a great idea. So once it clots, you can put that on. Oh, that's a fantastic idea.
You want to have 3% hydrogen peroxide for vomiting. You don't want to use hydrogen peroxide on wounds. There's a lot of chatter about this online, you know, whether it's good or bad. You'll find people on both sides of the fence, but most people seem to say that it's not good for wounds, that it actually causes more injuries to the wound than it helps.
Now, this is, I think, the second time in this episode that you've mentioned 3% hydrogen peroxide. So is most
Most of it is 3%. You want to have some bitter apple spray, which is what we use to keep dogs from licking wounds once we've cleaned them up and gotten them all settled down. You want to have Quick Stop, which stops bleeding on nails, but can be used in other areas. Scissors, and some other things you might want to think about. We talked about using a turkey baster for inducing vomiting. You could also use a big eyedropper.
Okay.
Petroleum jelly is good for eye injuries and for wounds. And milk of magnesia or activated charcoal.
And what are those for?
Those absorb poisons. You only want to use those when you need, when you're directed by a vet to use them.
Got it. Or poison control.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. And those are things I can buy at any drugstore?
Yep. Very much so.
Okay.
If you use Amazon Smile and you buy it through Amazon, you can designate Greyhound Friends of New Jersey as the beneficiary, and Greyhound Friends will get some money out of it.
Well, that's even better, Patty.
Even better.
I just want to repeat what I said in the beginning of this podcast, and that is that Patty and I are providing these tips as informational only. We are not medical professionals. In cases,
nor do we play one on TV.
No, we don't. We should be on TV, Patty. We should be. Maybe some scout will hear our podcast and realize, you know, how wonderful we are, and will put us on TV with About Greyhounds or maybe a song and dance routine. So in cases where you need to immediately administer medical care to your dog, call your dog's vet as soon as possible, if it's possible to do so. And your vet will give you guidance on what to do next. So just wanted to repeat that
exactly.
We are not medical professionals.
And if your vet is not available, you can always call poison control.
Yep. So, Patty, you've certainly shed a lot of light and given some excellent tips about prevention and how to react quickly when first aid is needed. It's been really helpful. I want to also extend thanks to the American Veterinary Medical Foundation, or the AVMF, for making this valuable information available to us so that we could bring it to our audience. In the description notes of this episode of About Greyhounds, you can find links to two free downloadable brochures that were created by AVMF. One is called Pet First Aid, which also includes the first aid kit materials Patty listed. And the other is called Household Hazards, which includes a list of foods and potential household toxins to keep away from your dog. You can download, print, and keep these in an easily accessible place, like pinned to a bulletin board in your kitchen, or even keep them in your first aid kit for your dog.
And they'll also be available on the Greyhound Friends website, gfnj.org.
Right, and I will see about getting them put on the GFNJ app. So, Patty, as always, your expertise is greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
You often hear the old adage that there's nothing more important than your health. And of course, the same goes for our greyhounds. I do hope you enjoyed today's episode and listening to Patty and I talk about what we know about first aid for our dogs and things to watch for and knowing when we should call our vets. Until next week, this is Jacqueline Howard with Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, and this has been an About Greyhounds podcast.